And let's go back to our conversation with David Data. He wrote a book, The Way of the Superior Man, A Man's Guide to Mastering the Challenges of Women, Work, and Sexual Desire. And he is doing a free introductory talk on sacred sex, the integration of sexuality and spirituality. You'll be able to hear this 7:30 Tuesday, June 17th. If you need more information, call these people up. They will direct you. 442-7350, 442-7350. I will give this number out at the end of my conversation with David again, so you can go hear this, because this is heavy-duty stuff. Stop hoping. In Chapter 1, Part 1, A Man's Way, stop hoping for completion of anything in life. This sounds very Buddhist, which is all right with me.
Well, if you study Buddhism, it sounds Buddhist. If you study Christianity, it sounds Christian. If you study Judaism, it sounds Jewish. I mean, the core of all of these religions is that the divine exists now, as it is. And the masculine error, the error that most men or women, when they're in their masculine, make, is that if they complete a project, when they complete a project, then they could rest. If I do this now, then my life will be good. They're always postponing that sense of total completion until something's done. Now, of course, as everybody knows, you keep doing that. You keep doing that, postponing it. Your life goes by. You're 40, 50, 60, 70. You're on your deathbed. And finally, it's like, well, my life was pretty good, but I never quite did or experienced really what I wanted to, because I was always postponing it to do what I felt I had to do in the meantime. That masculine error is so pervasive, it prevents us from relaxation right now into our utter, our true nature, whatever word you want to use for it, our core, our essential desires, living from our heart's desires. It's a big masculine error. And now women, the feminine, doesn't do that. The feminine is very responsive to whether somebody's open in the moment. So one conflict between men and women is men, and their masculine, are always trying to do their project. They're committed to their mission, which is the masculine way. The feminine is always, well, are we flowing in love now? Are we flowing in love now? And the masculine goes, wait a second, I've got something, I'll be back. I've got something to do first. She wants it now. She's a reminder that if you're not open now, if you're not free now, if you're not present now, you're never going to be. So she provides an antidote to that masculine error. Now the feminine error is, do you love me? Do you love me? The feminine error is always feeling that they're not loved and wanting more love. Mm-hmm. So the masculine provides the antidote to that of, yes, I love you, but also be free right now. You don't need a certain form in the relationship to be happy. So the feminine people tend to be dependent on relationship to feel loved. Masculine people tend to be dependent on their projects and their mission in order to feel like they're going to be free. Both of those are illusions, but they're pervasive illusions, so knowing how to work with them is very important.
Let's talk about these illusions and how to work with it. There was a report, a former or a listener, a caller, Bill, and I saw it on the McNeil Lehrer, the NewsHour, last night, and from what I know, that a lot of our conditioning is genetic.
Yes.
A lot of it is genes, and that men react because of their preconditioned, predetermined genetic makeup, and women act in a certain way also.
Exactly.
And, you know, and I've talked about, well, why men used to pay for all the dates, because historically, before there was a history, women would stay in the caves, breastfeed the baby, men would go out and bring the meat home. This is all part of a syndrome which we seem to forget and have to realize and work at overcoming, but acknowledging why we are the way we are now. Would you agree, disagree?
I would like to take that a little farther.
Okay.
As far as you went, I would totally agree. I would say then that besides the biological influences, which are, I agree with you 100%, there are also, in addition to that, spiritual influences that are equally as potent in conditioning our behavior. For instance, let's use the one you just picked, men paying for women's dates. I agree with you. Your explanation is a beautiful biological explanation, which I agree with. However, consider this. If we want to feel into what the ultimate nature of the divine is, or of God, whatever we want to call it, even in the Bible it says there was nothing and then there was light. So there's this creation from nothing of light. In all spiritual traditions, that nothingness is the masculine, that light is the feminine. So if you identify with light, then you want to know how you look, you want to be radiant, you use makeup, you use clothing to make yourself more radiant because you identify with light. And those men and women who identify with light are concerned about that. Now, people who identify with that void, that emptiness, want to achieve that emptiness, that freedom of being totally open, no constraint, that sense of openness and freedom. Uh-huh. Now, to do that, they have to be clear in their mission. They have to know what they want, and they have to be able to be free in it. They can't be confused. That's how you gain clarity. Because of that, the masculine acts as a directional force spiritually. The feminine acts as the force of radiance or energy. There is no direction to energy. It's like the ocean and a boat on the ocean. The ocean is feminine. It's filled with immense power, but it doesn't go anywhere. It goes everywhere. The masculine is like a boat on the ocean. It goes from point A to point B. So anyone using their masculine, man or woman, is going from point A to point B. Anyone in their feminine, man or woman, is flowing like the ocean. Now, to pay for somebody's meal is a way of directing that energy. It's a way of saying, I'm taking care of this, I'm the boat. We're going to go from point A to point B. Let's meet at 7 o'clock, I'll pick you up, we'll go out, I'll take care of this. That frees the feminine to be radiant, to be relaxed. Now,
but it also sets women and men up, conditioning them to expect these things all the time, and makes pedestals.
If people do expect it, I totally agree with you. Again, we have to be careful in these descriptions because both biology and spirituality impinge on every moment. And so if a woman is coming from her biological self, which is that, well, the man brings home the bacon, you know, the man brings home the meat, as you say, and I expect it, I totally agree with you. It's a limitation, and it should be grown beyond. Mm-hmm. So women should pay as much or whenever they want. It shouldn't be a tight thing. On the other hand, once a woman and man grow beyond the man always pays, the woman never pays, into the stage of, anyone could pay whenever they want. We're free beings. There is another stage to grow, and that stage is who paying creates the greatest gift. Who paying creates the greatest love and freedom? Not who should pay, but in the moment, and that might change day by day, who creates the greatest gift? What opens the hearts most? What deepens the soul the most? And that is actually a spiritual art. Sometimes the woman paying may deepen the soul most. Sometimes the man paying. But it's not neutral. It's not 50-50. The 50-50 stage is a transitional stage between the biological limits that you were talking about and the spiritual gifts that I'm hoping to bring us to.
I would like your definition of spirituality and why it is important, and it seems for many people to be an almost a nebulous state, that it's just something that someone created, and I vacillate between wanting to believe, which I more spiritual than religious, and then just thinking about Jean-Paul Sartre and existentialism and nothing to it, just a bunch of mental masturbation.
Right.
Yes.
All of those are true, but I would say most spirituality is, in fact, a bunch of mental masturbation.
Yeah.
So I certainly agree with you there. To me, what spirituality is when people recognize who they are in their deepest place.
Mm-hmm.
When anybody just relaxes as they are completely, without adding stress, without adding fear, without adding hope, without adding desire, just being who they are in the moment, that is for them, in that moment, their spirit, their deepest depth, their love, their heart, their freedom, whatever word you want to put on that. Now, living a life from that place of openness, from that place of knowing who you are in your depth, creates a spiritual life. Now, for each individual, that will be very unique, and you can practice that sense of openness and relaxation in any tradition of spirituality if it's authentic.
Okay. Live with an open heart even if it hurts. Now, for some people, to have an open heart because their heart has been injured, and I take responsibility for my feelings. No one makes me feel bad, good, right, wrong, good or bad. But so, and I, you know, I don't always live what I say, but a lot of people blame everyone else for their life.
Sure.
You made me happy, or you made me love you, or you made me so mad. How can you live with an open heart and still protect yourself? Because there are semi-pseudo full-fledged wannabe sociopaths which permeate the planet. You know that.
Definitely. There might be some walking around here as far as
could
I
be.
Well, Henry, obviously you've thought about these things a lot from your question.
Oh, yes.
And I appreciate your questions very much. The way I see it is that there are three stages in what you've just described, living with an open heart. The first stage is you blame others for what you feel. If you feel bad, you blame your wife, you blame your husband, you blame your dog, your kid, your friends, whatever. You blame others. The second stage, as you've described, as you grow, you say, I'm responsible for how I feel. Other people could influence me, but ultimately I'm responsible for how I feel. There's another stage beyond that, and that's the stage I'm intimating about in the book. And that stage is realizing that others do affect how you feel. You affect how you feel, but you are not your feelings. Who you are in depth is like the sky that the clouds go through. And again, these are words, but I'm going to try to make it as concrete as possible. When you grow far enough, you realize that you can give love no matter how bad you feel. Now, a good example of this is with your child. Let's say you're watching TV or something. Your kid comes up, kicks you in the shin. It hurts. But you know he's just a kid or she's just a kid. And so even though they hurt you, you very lovingly deal with the situation. You don't necessarily let them keep kicking you, but you don't smack them necessarily either. You say, hey, that hurts. You don't do that. You help them because you love them. In other words, you're feeling pain, you're hurting, but you can still give love. Well, we do that with our children because they're our children, but we can do that with everybody. We can do that with every situation. It doesn't mean you allow sociopaths to do whatever they want at all. I was listening to what you were talking about, Timothy McVeigh and non-parole and so forth. We take measures, whatever's necessary, to limit the harm that's caused on the planet. But while we're doing that, if our heart is not open, we can make some serious mistakes coming from our own fear. In other words, we can live with our heart open. We could suffer the wounds that are inflicted on us. Keep our heart open. It still hurts. And still create freedom and love in the world, even while we're hurting. If we try to protect ourselves from that hurt, we also protect ourselves from love and compassion. And without love and compassion, this world is a pretty dry and dangerous place.
I couldn't agree with you more. Before I go to the phones and speak with Bill, during the break, David and I were talking about something, and I just want to tell a fast story here. I'm known for really long-form interviews. It's a shame that you have to go in 20 minutes, because I had mentioned to David we could do 3 hours uninterrupted about these subjects here. But I'm aware of the dark side in my life. And I told someone at a party once, I said, yes, I have a very dark side, but I delegate it to the back of the theater of my experience. It's sitting in the back row in the dark. And every now and then, to prove that I'm still sane, because I know these, I get little tweaks, I say, come up, come to the forward, let me look at your demon-possessed dark side. I know that you're there. I acknowledge you're part of my life, but go back and sit down in the last row. I don't want you to play yourself out in the real world. A lot of people, David, do not accept their dark side, their angers, their viciousness, their brutalities, or whatever it might be. So they push it down real far, and then it manifests itself in ways which are detrimental to other living creatures. Let's talk about aggression and the dark side of our lives.
Well, first of all, when the masculine feels that aggressiveness, it goes outward. It becomes abuse of others. When the feminine feels it, it goes inward and it becomes self-abuse. So I want to differentiate self-abuse from other abuse, the feminine way from the masculine way, but they're both rooted in the same dark side. To me, the dark side is the root of our energy. Nothing gives people more energy than the dark side. Watching a movie, a war movie, a violent movie, a movie about violent sex even. The reason those things are so prolific in our culture is because we've divorced ourselves from the loving versions of those things, and we're seeking to experience them outside of ourselves in entertainment because we are unwilling to embrace them in ourselves. In other words, in the old days, martial arts, for instance, was a way of embracing our desire to combat one another, but embrace it as an art in love. You never, if you're a good martial artist, you would never do it to hurt somebody. You do it as a development of art, as a form of love, really. But still, it's that same precision as a warrior. All of our dark side can be approached the same way. The part of every man that has fantasies of controlling a woman sexually, forcing sex on a woman, which most men have had fantasies about, and most women have had fantasies about being forced to do something sexually, most men don't understand that they can live that lovingly with an intimate partner, consensual agreement, that is, let's play this out. Let's ravish each other. Let's bite each other and smack each other, not because we're angry, but lovingly, with humor, with smiles on our face, with growls. When we do that lovingly, those dark sides can be expressed through love, and they're transformed into passion. Aggression becomes passion when it's combined with love, when it's combined with your heart, when it's combined with your soul. If you don't combine it with your heart, when you don't combine it with your soul, it festers in you. You suppress it. It builds up its own, as you say, demonic kind of power, and it wants to be expressed. Now, either we allow it to be expressed, in which case we need to be medically treated or locked up or something like that, or we don't allow it to be expressed, in which case we develop a need to seek it in entertainment. We love watching TV. The whole Timothy McVeigh thing, I mean, hundreds of people were killed. It's a horrible tragedy. What a ridiculous thing to make that entertainment, which it has become. Because we all want to feel the Timothy McVeigh part of ourselves, the part of ourselves of destruction, of death, of other people dying. It's such a tragedy, and yet it becomes entertainment rather than simply a heart-rending tragedy, and we have to deal with the situation.
See, David, there are people out there who will say, that's sick. I never felt I wanted it. See, I talked to a man at a party about 5 years ago, and I said, yeah, I've had some anger, a lot of anger in my life, but I understand where, so sometimes I play it out in my mind. I make these nuclear explosions. I decapitate people, and then I go, I can separate my fantasy life from my real life, and I don't want to hurt anyone else in that way. So I've become much more sensitive and aware about who I am. And this man looked at me and he said, you're really sick. 6 months later, he was indicted and went to jail for fraud and extortion.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not facing up to these things that go on. Our primal history for a lot of people, and there are people who are very gentle souls who don't want to hurt anyone else. And there's a combination of obvious, hidden, and unknown agendas all cross-referencing in our lives.
Absolutely.
And you've got to address this honestly.
Hey, anybody who enjoys hunting, anyone who enjoys fishing, anyone who enjoys cop stories, war movies, you know, I mean, I enjoy all of those things, they're enjoying an aspect of the masculine, which is facing death. Now, to do that with love, so you don't really hurt anybody, is very different than what you're talking about, dissociating from it, denying it in yourself, and needing to see it in other people, needing people to live out the part of you that you haven't embraced in yourself. And when I say embrace it, I don't mean live it out, I don't mean be a Timothy McVeigh, that's horrible. What I mean is, realize there is a part of you that as a child loved smushing ants. You know? There's a part of you that as an adult enjoys a good, whatever, cop story on TV or a movie, something like that.
Gratuitous sex and violence.
Well, at the lowest levels, it's gratuitous sex and violence. At the highest level, it's the art of being challenged onto death, facing death and coming out the other side. Many men who go to war, actually combat veterans, come back and nothing touches them like that combat situation did, because they were facing death, they were at their edge. That is the essential masculine bliss. Playing poker, playing chess, playing football, playing basketball are ritualized forms of facing an opponent, facing death, so to speak. It's not actual death, but, you know, sometimes, you know, sudden death playoffs.
Win-lose.
Win-lose.
That's it.
That's the masculine bliss, to face that. Now, there are pathological forms of that, Timothy McVeigh, you know, so I'm not supporting those pathological forms, but I'm saying we become pathological unless we can play these things out lovingly in non-pathological forms.
I realize that about sports. You know, I'm not a big sports follower, and I think sports is actually sociology. But it is a way for people to find teams, and it's very primal. You know, territorial imperative. James Aubrey, back in the 60s, wrote this book, which is very influential in what made me desire to think about why things occur. And it is true, we are still animals who have a herding sort of instinct, and it's the other, it's them, it's the Jews, it's the blacks, it's the Russians, it's the South Americans, it's the Chinese, it's this, but it's us, and you know, we rally around this little flag, and then it's your family and your block and your neighborhood and your presidential and your team, you know, it's my team. And I think some of it is healthy, but the way a lot of people deal with sports, I think, is unhealthy. I think it's gotten to be so excessive that the icons of our society are sports figures and entertainers and performers rather than the people that I think deserve the accolades?
All of those people are people who both are acting from their biology, as you say, mm-hmm. and representing our deepest spiritual desires, which is to be free. When a football player breaks through that line into the end zone and puts up his hand, yes, that's the same feeling that a philosopher feels when he goes, aha, I got it. In other words, it's that desire for freedom that drives both. Certainly, some sports are more towards the biological expression of that, but they're all the same expression. The essential ecstasy of making a goal in sports, of golfing and getting out of a sand trap, shooting a good round, is the same ecstasy as spiritual awakening, ego death. That's what's called ego death. You're facing your own demons. It's the same thing. You're talking about teams. Well, it's me against my own limitations, and I'm going to break through it, and I'm going to go through to the freedom on the other side. It's the same as philosophical aha. You struggle. You're thinking this, that, and finally go, oh, I see. I get it. I understand.
But doesn't it get carried to the extreme when we pit ourselves against other people and winning at any cost?
I think we're all doing that. I think we choose the domain we want to do that in. If we want to do that financially, we become businessmen. If we want to do that mentally, we become philosophers and professors. If we want to do that physically, we become athletes. They're all masculine games of feeling trapped and getting the joy of unconstraining yourself into freedom.
I want to take a call because Bill has been waiting, and we have so much to talk about and so little time. Bill, welcome to KJFK, and sorry to keep you waiting.
No, that's okay, Henry. I appreciate the quick service because in lieu of our private conversation, that's the fastest you've ever got a guest on for me. Thank you.
Did you want to say I have a question or comment?
I just had a couple questions, if you'll answer them here, David. Did you say that, just to get the flavor of what you're saying, that
sure.
it's more important to learn how to harness the male energy rather than where it comes from or a combination of both?
I'm not sure what you're asking. Harness what kind of male energy? Sexual energy? Aggressive energy?
The male competitive energy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's
Yes, it's very important for men to realize that their life is driven by that, and so to commit it to the highest good, to say, I have this drive in me, I have this aggressive energy, how can I serve the world with it? How can I serve...
Or to serve yourself if you're more selfish.
To serve yourself, to serve your intimate partner, to serve your family, to serve everybody.
Cool. And what role do you think sports plays in it? Because I happen to think that sports plays a phenomenally good role for training your mind to think real well so you can talk, I guess.
I agree with you, Bill.
I'm a little bit bummed because UT just said my last semester was my last semester, so my brain's not up to its usual par.
That's fine.
But, what was I saying? Oh, yeah, sports.
Anything you do that puts you at your edge, whatever you find that is, what brings you to the edge of your capacity, that challenges your deepest gifts. For some people, sports brings that challenge to them. For some people, sitting on a meditation cushion brings that challenge to them. For some people, a financial combat brings that challenge to them.
Yeah.
If you can do that, it sharpens you. Men sharpen their swords, so to speak, the sword of their heart, ultimately, by challenging their deepest self to go beyond themselves and give their greatest gift. And if sports does that for you, go for it.
Hey, I appreciate it, David. What's the spelling on your last name, just out of idle curiosity?
It's D-E-I-D-A. And I wanted to say that the book, The Way of the Superior Man, that we've been talking about is brand new. It's just coming out to bookstores now. And if you can't find it in your bookstore, you can call toll-free 1-888-MAN-WOMAN.
I'm real good at finding stuff at my local bookstore. Could you spell that last name one more time?
Sure. It's D-E-I-D-A.
Okay. Hey,
you got it?
I have one more question. What about the inevitable consequence of sex? Kids. Do you think it's that most men really don't understand their role in raising kids, or have you thought about that or philosophized about that much?
You're asking, what do I feel men think about kids?
No, not so much what do they think about them. Everybody likes kids.
Sure.
Well, mostly everybody is a sociopath. But what I'm saying is, do you think men really understand their role in imparting, you know, their maleness to not only their sons but their daughters, or You know,
I understand what you're
saying. Setting a good example is what I'm trying to get at.
That's a great question. I think men, some men do and some men don't. If a man understands their own power as a man, if a man lives their own authenticity, then they give that authenticity to their children. If they're divided inside, if the man is divided inside, isn't sure of himself, doesn't know his real goals, his real direction, then he transmits that uncertainty, that self-doubt to his children.
Well, there's nothing wrong with giving kids a little bit of self-doubt, but I see what you're saying, and I'm really interested. How many books have you put out? Is this your first one?
No, this is my third, and I've just finished two more in the last few days, as a matter of fact.
Are the others on philosophy as well?
Well, they're not on philosophy. One is called Intimate Communion, and that mm-hmm. book is about relationships and how they grow through stages. One is called It's a Guy Thing, and it's a manual for women about how to deal with men. Then there's The Way of the Superior Man, which is a manual for men. And the two books I just finished, which aren't available published form yet, are about spirituality and sexuality.
Cool. And I'd like to hang up and listen to you talk about a little bit of your own training, you know, and how you've accomplished what you've accomplished.
You know, you've asked the next question because we have got 7 minutes, and I'm really saddened that the man has to leave.
Henry. Because there was so much better guest you've ever had on. He's a master communicator, and you know how I appreciate that.
I know that you do.
And that's why I appreciate you too, Henry.
Thank you, William.
Thanks for the questions, Bill.
Take
Bye-bye,
care.
Dave.
Take
Bye-bye.
Care. Master communicator. How did you reach the, you know, I was looking, I went to the internet and I punched in your name and I got this stuff here and I was going to comment about it. But how did you get to the point where you are now, and why did you start this path, this search? What happened in your life?
You know, that's a large question that I'm working on a book to answer, as a matter of fact.
Can you give a little insight now?
A little bit, yeah. From a very early age, I've been interested in people and in myself, mm-hmm. how to grow, how to be happy, what is truth, what is beauty. They were questions everyone's interested in at some level. But I've really persisted in answering those questions for myself. I've had great teachers from a very young age. I've had great intimacies and a long-term intimate partner for the last 14 years. I've had great friends who have served me. And I've had a lot of luck in being able to do what I needed to do to teach me the lessons I needed to learn. So a lot of it just came from my life experience, and a lot of it came from teachers and friends and lovers.
My sister Bonnie said, you think too much. You analyze everything. And I said, yes, I am a hyperventilator, but this is who I am, and I have to know.
Well, you know, as Bill was saying about sports, anything can be a doorway into the fullness of the unknown, of openness. Certainly, sports can be that for some people, but what you're describing, mentalizing, I wouldn't say you're an over-mentalizer. I would say your gift is that, and if you go through that gift, you could unfold what's behind it. You're so passionate about truth, about what's behind everything. That's what drives your thinking. And so why not take it all the way? What is the nature of your thinking? Go all the way. Why are you bothering to think? What's the source of it? What's moving you? And then relax into that and find out what happens to your thoughts.
That's a good point. I'm going to take that very seriously because I've always wanted to write sort of an autobiography, the title of which will be A Walking into Mirrors.
That's beautiful.
Before we run out of time, one thing it says, she needs your... This
is about a crucial issue in intimacy.
Okay.
The feminine is energy, light, as I was talking about earlier. And so in a typical relationship, the man tends to be more masculine, the woman more feminine. Mm-hmm. Not all relationships. Some relationships, the man is more feminine, the woman's more masculine. And then in homosexual relationships, either partner can choose to be the more masculine mm-hmm. partner or the feminine partner. So it differs in different relationships. But we'll just talk about the conventional heterosexual relationship. The feminine partner, in this case the woman in most cases, but not all, is wild with energy. The feminine is energy. What she says reflects what she's feeling, not some overarching view on things. What she does reflects the energy of her disposition. Her traps are her emotions. Her gifts are her emotions. She lives in a sea of energy. She's like the weather outside. It's raining sometimes and the beautiful sun comes out. And it's that spontaneity, that freshness, that openness, that is nature, life force itself. And that life force is the feminine. Now the masculine, and in this case most men in relationships, have a goal. They have a mission. They're trying to get, as I said earlier, from point A to point B, like you are a very mm-hmm. masculine man. A woman, therefore, it's going to drive you crazy in that sense, is that you're going to say, she's going to be talking to you, and you're going to say, get to the point already.
No, I've got to correct you, because I have better relationships with women because I enjoy women and their thinking. And friends who know me say, well, we know that you're a male and you're heterosexual, but you think very much like a woman.
Interesting women. I'd like to meet them personally.
In Miami, Florida, I had about 10 or 15 women friends.
Oh, wait. I'm not talking about women friends. I'm talking about your intimate partner. Tell me about your relationship with your intimate partner.
Oh, God, I could tell you. I was on the Oprah Winfrey Show talking about my marriage. This was a woman who couldn't communicate.
No,
I'm
there
a communicator.
You go. That's what I'm talking about.
She couldn't talk about her feelings. She couldn't express herself.
Let's go there. That's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about your women friends.
Okay.
I'm talking about your intimacy.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about, the heterosexual intimacy. Her energy, that's what I'm talking about. Her energy speaks to you. What communication means to you is you could put words on your feelings, for instance. The feminine cannot. Never can, never will. The masculine part of a woman could certainly talk about her feelings. The moment you ask a woman how she's feeling, you've totally neutralized her femininity. You're causing her to move into your masculine. It's like going to the ocean and saying, hey, ocean, how far is the tide going to come up today? How far is this wave going to move today? You don't know. The nature is too immense. It's too mysterious. It's too vast for the masculine mind to put into a little box and understand. And any time you ask a woman, your intimate partner we're talking about, how she's feeling, what she wants to do, what she means by something. Although that's a human thing to do, it's a fine thing to do, you're causing her to move into her masculine to be able to answer that. When she moves into her masculine, the only thing to do is to argue, butt heads, debate, masculine to masculine.
And what's an alternative way to approach that?
The alternative way to approach it is like a sailor navigates the sea or like a hiker moves through the woods.
Case this, dear.
That would be one way to do it. Another way to do it would be to touch her a certain way, look at her a certain way, use words to communicate feeling, but not by representation, but by tone. Words more as poetry. You know, sacred dance, for instance, is as powerful spiritual tradition as sacred philosophy. Sacred dance can't be reduced to words, or it would be. And philosophy can't be reduced to dance, or it would be. They're two whole arts. Women are more coming from that sacred dance place. They dance their emotions. They show them. You can't ask for words on them unless you want their masculine to communicate with you.
Do you think that I see, I have a dear friend, and she said, I know a lot of women, but there isn't any one of these women that I would set you up with because I'm not in relationship now. She said, you're a little bit too much, too powerful, too overbearing, and not overbearing, but just a strong presentation, and they're a little bit too crazy. And I know that you're mad, but you're not dangerous. Is the difference?
No, only a crazy woman's going to be able to match you, I'm afraid. Only a woman who's so strong that she looks crazy.
Yes, but also may have their heads in the cloud, but their feet firmly planted on terra firma.
When a woman's feet are planted on terra firma, her hips swivel like the ocean. They do you got it?
Lordy, I got it.
The woman that's going to match you is going to be so emotionally wild and non-verbally communicative in the sense of meaning what they say precisely that the only thing you'll be able to connect at is pure love. What you say, she'll be bored with, or she just won't understand, she'll misinterpret. What she says, you'll be frustrated with, because it won't make sense to you.
So what's the connection?
The connection is the gift to pull you out of your mind into what's behind it, as we were talking about, and to pull her out of her emotions into what's behind those, and connect from that place of openness.
And that, when that happens and you merge not only in a spiritual sense but a physical sense,
absolutely,
then the universe is yours and there is a oneness which transcends the duality.
You got it.
And we got to get out of here because we are at a time. David, I do want to have you back. I thank you for being here. This was great.
Thanks a lot, Henry.
Hopefully we'll do it again.
Thanks.
David Data. If you want to listen to him talk, 442-7350, you can get information for his Sacred Sex free lecture. 442-7350, David Data, Tuesday the 17th. This is Henry Friedman. Don't go away. There's always more to this story. I'll be back.